Now, I have promised through your chairman this evening that I would speak tonight on a subject that's very near and dear to the heart of every alcoholic. It's very near because it's ever present. It's very dear because it can be very costly. And that is the subject of resentment. Now, I'm going to begin with a little poem. It's lousy poetry, but it does have a point. And it goes something like this. Resentments, oh resentments, we deplore. If it weren't for resentments, we would all be much more sober and much more happy and much more holy forevermore. Now, when we came to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was suggested to us that the prime enemy of all alcoholics is resentment. We found that whether we like it or not, there now exists in the personality of the alcoholic an automatic tie-up between resentment and the compulsion to drink. And we found that if we tolerated, if we permitted resentments too frequently or on for too prolonged occasions to remain within us, that automatically, sooner or later, we would start to drink again. You know, in the Bible somewhere, it gives the genealogy of the early members of this human race. And it says there that Adam begot so-and-so, you know, and so-and-so begot so-and-so, and so-and-so begot so-and-so. Well, I'm going to paraphrase that a little to try to bring out the cycle of the alcoholic. And it goes something like this. Frustration begot resentment. Resentment begot self-pity. Self-pity begot drinking. Drinking begot grandiosity. Grandiosity begot frustration. Frustration begot resentment, and on around the clock we went. And so now that we learn, whether we like it or not, that if an alcoholic repeats any part of this cycle, the cycle will repeat itself. Therefore, if I become resentful, remain resentful, I'm going to start drinking again. If I start drinking, I'm going to end up resentful. And if I start drinking and become resentful, I'm going to be frustrated, full of self-pity, and around the clock again. Now, we were told that to the alcoholic, resentment is simply suicide. We cannot tolerate resentment. Now, if this is true, then let's ask ourselves three questions. What is resentment? Where do they come from? And what can we do about them? Now, resentments come from injured pride. Someone has hit us in the eye, and we don't spell it E-Y-E. Our ego has been hurt. We are irritated. We are angry at something that happened or something someone has said. And so we're all burned up. You know, talking about being all burned up, they tell the story of a colored fellow who was on the train, at a porter on the train, from New York to Chicago and return, the 20th Century Limited. And so one time on the at Chicago, a fellow boarded the train, and he wanted to get off the train at Buffalo, New York. So he called this porter in. He said, "Look, porter," he said, "I want you to awaken me at 5 o'clock in the morning." Now, the train got in Buffalo at 5:30 in the morning. "I want you to awaken me and see that I get off the train in Buffalo." He said, "I've got the most important appointment of my life to keep there. Now, don't let anything interfere with it. Be sure to see that I get off the train at Buffalo." Well, the train went on through the night, came into the Grand Central Station, and the porter stepped off the black platform, was standing there, and who comes running out of the train but this fellow? He grabbed the porter by the nape of the neck, and he said, "Porter, why didn't you awaken me and put me off the train at Buffalo?" He said, "You caused me to miss the most important appointment of my whole life." And he cursed and he swore and he threatened, and then he finally turned on his heel and walked out of the station. Just then the station master came along, and he looked at the porter and he said, "Boy, did you ever see anybody so mad in all your life?" "Yes," said the porter, said, "you should have seen the guy I put off at Buffalo." So resentments begin with anger or irritation. But this irritation is not in itself a resentment yet. It is merely the soil in which the resentment will grow. Now let's take the word itself, resentment. And it comes from two little Latin words, resentire, which means to refeel, to refeel, to nurse, to mull over, to dig around, to cultivate. So there you have the resentment. Something happened, somebody says something, then I refeel it. I think of, what'd he say? 5 hours later, that's so-and-so. 24 hours later, I'll get even. A full-blown resentment. It's like the physical hurt, you know, our disease. If we dig around it, it becomes infected. And then it grows and spreads and kills. And resentment to the alcoholic, as we said before, is suicide. Now, if this is true, then this brings to our mind three very important truths. First of all, resentments are occasioned by pride. Therefore, first, we can cut down on the number of occasions by the practice of the opposite virtue of humility. Don't forget, the bigger our head, the better the target it is for the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. Therefore, we can practice humility and gradually cut down the number of occasions of being hurt or irritated or angry. But we'll always have pride. That's a natural drive within us. We'll have it until 2 days after we're dead, I suppose. I don't know. But, you know, some people think they can eliminate those things from their lives. You can't. You can moderate them. You can control them, but we can't eliminate them. To show you the wrong idea that some people have, they tell a story about a certain novice mistress. Now, a novice mistress, she is the nun in the convent who teaches the young nuns the wares and wherefores of the spiritual life. So she was teaching her charges to slay a passion a year. You can't do that. They won't be slayed. We can merely, by the practice of the opposite virtue, gradually moderate them and bring them under control. Secondly, since we'll always have these occasions, because we'll always have pride, therefore, there's nothing else to do but gradually more and more refuse to refeel them when it comes up. Somebody said to them, let it go. Let it go. Then it won't become a resentment. Something happens, it's over with. Let it go. Then it won't become a resentment. This can be accomplished, you know. It can be accomplished to such an extent that on occasion when things happen to upset us, 10 minutes later, we've forgotten about it. People have gone that far in accomplishing the control of resentment. Now let's see how they do it. Now if we've already got resentment, there's only one way to get rid of them, and that is by the practice of the opposite virtue of love. Resentments are the beginning of hatred. The opposite of hatred is love. So therefore, I must practice actions of love. Do things for those who I resent. That is the only way we can eliminate resentment. Now, when we come to the alcoholic, we find that we are a supersensitized lot of individuals. We find that we have, by the end of the drinking career, become pathologically proud. So we need a little more protective coating than this ordinary practice of virtue. Something to help us out, especially in the beginning, to keep from becoming resentful. Now, in the Big AA book, it tells us that one way to do it is, well, think of the other fellow, he's sicker than you are. I don't know, that didn't do me any good. I thought, well, I'm sick too. I didn't work for me. And so gradually over a period of years, I have picked up here and there in AA what I call gimmicks. Little axioms that are a tremendous help to the avoiding of resentment. The first such gimmick was given to me by Bill W., our founder. You know, the first year that I spoke publicly, so-called, in AA, Wasn't very long until one of the group, somewhere, somebody in the group, said something about me that wasn't very nice. And I thought, well, gee, that's terrible. I was quite upset. I say, fortunately, I met Bill at that time. I was able to spend a day and a half with him. And after I got through listening to him, and what had been said about him, I felt so much better. Then he gave me the first gimmick. And it is, expect criticism. Who are we not to be criticized? As we say in AA, if you want to get talked about, just do something. So gradually, I came to a point where I could ignore it, and now I really look for it. You know, like the funny papers on Sunday morning. And what a godsend it has been. The rumors and the rumor factories that have produced these rumors. You know, I've been drunk in all 48 states. According to rumor, about a year and a half ago, one evening I was sitting at home in my room and the phone rang. It was a long distance call. And the voice on the other end said, "Oh, gee, it's good to hear your voice." It was a priest friend of mine in San Antonio, a member of AA. And I said, "Now, come on, cut out the palaver. What's all the affection about? What's the matter?" "Well," he said, "they got a rumor out down here that you're drunk down in El Paso." "Well," I said, "I tell you what you do, Mac. You go down to El Paso and sober me up." It's a little bit far for me to go. And then I have, of course, gotten slews of letters along the way. And I enjoy them. Really, I do. I really enjoy them. I'm going to just read a couple to you. Excerpts, you know. This first one comes from Alternate Delegate to New York. You know what those fellows are. And it says, it goes like this. "Dear Father, since I have had the immense privilege of being chosen by Almighty God for the role of alternate delegate and feeling my responsibilities after such choosing, I have felt that I should call your attention to some things you are doing against our dear traditions." Then he goes on, and he ends up with, "I'll pray for you." Well, now, I could have got very upset. But I expected such a thing, so I wrote a letter. I said, "Dear John," his name was John Doe. I said, "I would be very ungrateful if I didn't take time out to thank you for your wonderful prayers. I said, particularly for the prayers of someone so high as you are in your position. You who have gone so far along the program of AA, so fast, we who have stumbled along so slowly can only cherish such things as your prayers. And now it gives us the hope that someday, and not far off, the effectiveness of your prayers will enable us too to sit with you in the seat of judgment."